16 to 1, a podcast about education, teaching, and learning.
Hi!
Hi!
How are you?
Surviving.
Yeah.
Chugging along.
I'm tired.
Yeah, it's been a long day. It was a long day of work for me.
It's been a long year.
It's been a long month. A long 2020 so far.
This has been the longest 7 years of my entire life.
Oof.
Yeah. And by 7 years, I mean 7 months.
Yeah.
It roughly translates.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's about right.
So what's going on?
Work is crushing me since I work in the web development general space.
And everybody needs a website.
Yeah, everyone wants a website. So it's been a little, I've been a little slammed, but it's been fun. Like, I have some fun work going on too.
Yeah.
So that's good. We've been trying to get outdoors to swim as much as possible.
Lots of that.
We're getting tan.
That's my happy place.
For me, that's really an accomplishment too. So,
not so much for me, but that's okay.
Yeah. What else? What else have we been doing?
I bought the dog a raft afloat for the pool.
Oh yeah.
To go along with that, that's probably the best thing I've ever purchased.
She has her own pool floaty now,
and she loves it.
It's really cute when she's on it.
I have a stack of books that I want to read. I just haven't started yet.
You must get on that.
Yeah.
You're about to become a 24/7 on-demand teacher bot.
I am a teacher bot in general. We got a big kid freezer.
Oh, yeah. We bought a freezer for our basement.
That was a big step.
Yeah. We've been excited to... This pandemic resource management business has us rethinking how and when we...
Survival 101.
Yeah. Well, how
when Kroger runs out of everything, what will we
right.
do?
How and when we purchase food and how we would like to... How we would like to more efficiently save, you know, leftovers and meals and stuff that we've prepared and done and whatever. So we're trying to make better use of space and money. So when we can buy things in bulk and just stick a giant log of meat in the freezer, we're going to try to do that. So
yeah, that was exciting. We did a little bit of traveling.
Yeah. We didn't fly because we were afraid of COVID. So we drove to Montana.
And back
from Ohio.
It was a hike.
That's a little bit of a hike. We stayed with my family out there, so
it was beautiful.
Kind of quarantining in the middle of nowhere in Montana.
We were able to stay distant, though.
Yeah.
I've been seeing some people on Facebook who are like, shouldn't be going anywhere ever. And like, I understand what they're saying, but like, sometimes you need to, you know, do something to take care of yourself.
I mean, I've been feeling some...
And within reason.
Yeah. I've been feeling some really strange sensations when we have had to find ourselves in social moments. We had like a funeral that we attended to this weekend. So that was like when we got done with seeing everybody that day, while it was happening, I felt myself completely incapable of like normal human social interaction.
It was just too much.
I couldn't, it was like there were more than, you know, two people in the room, and I was just like, I don't remember how to do this. Mm-hmm. I guess it's like a thing that requires practice, at least for me, that kind of social interaction, because I'm falling out of practice and I'm not really sure how to handle it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's the hard thing, is like navigating what is, and you know, like in that case for the funeral, I mean, they'd put it off like 3 or 4 months already.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just... Anyways, there's some things you have to do, obviously.
Yeah.
But you can do them within reason. So what are we talking about this week?
Oh, boy. Well, to kick off...
to go along with everything else we just mentioned.
Yeah. To put all of that in context. we're gonna... Since I'm gonna have to talk about it, and you're allowed to shoot me dagger eyes when I do this, but school is approaching. The 2020-2021 school year is on the horizon, and nobody knows what we're doing yet or how to deal with it. So there's a lot of stress, both for students and for teachers, and I guess also for, you know, parents. Lots of stress around the start of the school year and what it's going to look like and how it's going to work and how teachers are going to avoid becoming 24/7 teacher bots and all kinds of stuff like that. So we're going to talk about the effects of stress on the educational experience in the context of, you know, a lot of kind of early childhood development type stuff, and then just the ongoing effects of stress for students and also stress for teachers and ways of coping with it. So that's what we're doing this week. Breathing exercises.
Well, I think it's important to talk about these things. And I mean, I would consider myself, I know you are as well, like I'm very much into like mental health awareness and supporting that. And so this feels like a good time to be talking about it, because I don't know of a single teacher or a coworker of mine or, you know, anyone who's in this kind of field right now who isn't stressed, and parents and, you know, everyone too, because there is so much up in the air. And here in Ohio, we just can't wear a mask. And so we just are going to be in trouble forever, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to tell us what stress is for all of us that act like we don't know what it is?
Yeah, I forget what stress is.
Please just tell me what this general dread is in my life every day.
What is this constant companion of mine?
My best friend, stress.
Yeah, it is, really. So it's generally categorized as a physical and emotional reaction that people experience as they encounter changes in life, to put it mildly.
That's a great understatement.
So, yeah, this thing that we put in the show notes here says that stress is a normal feeling, and I cannot identify that with that any more strongly. Yes, it is a normal feeling for me.
But I think that's important to, like, say that. You know what I mean?
Stress is normal?
Yeah.
Yeah, we try not to talk about it. We try to only talk about it at breaking points, but it's actually this low-grade thing going on at all points. Right, right. Yeah, so long-term stress, it can contribute to all kinds of health problems, which is another reason we really should be talking about these kinds of things more than we probably do. Health problems, that they include digestive disorders, headaches, sleep disorders, all kinds of other symptoms.
Same.
It can worsen asthma, and it's been linked to depression. Same. Depression, anxiety, and other mental illnesses.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what do you look for in your students? What kind of signs of stress do you see kind of in the school context?
It depends on the age for sure, but there are some pretty clear signs of it. You'll see really poorly developed executive functioning skills.
What are executive functioning skills?
It's like their planning ability and their also like their ability to complete a task when they've started it, and kind of like seeing something through.
Like attention and yeah. Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. So they'll have a lack of self-regulation and self-reflection, which also just means that they're not really considering all of the things that are sort of like happening and why they're happening. They have reduced impulse control, which kids need any bit of impulse control that they have. So mm-hmm. to not, you know, to have it reduced is a big issue. They'll have really poor coping skills, so they might act out or something like that because they don't know a healthy way mm-hmm. to react to what they're feeling, or just in general, just poor stress management. So lashing out. Yeah. Like
stress makes it harder for you to manage stress.
Yeah. And I want to make it clear, like when I laugh at these things, like as someone who's like, Katie, this is me, like literally speaking, like I've been diagnosed with anxiety and depression and all of these things. So when I laugh about it, it's mostly just because I'm able to see these things so much differently in myself now as a 30-year-old than I ever did as a student, or even in my early 20s before I went to the doctor and got some help that I, you know, needed. So my laughing is not a reflection of like a joking side of this. It's more just like, well, Katie, maybe you could have just, you know, read the internet briefly and you would know what you had sooner. It was mm-hmm. just, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So I just want to make that clear, because it's not something to laugh about. But one of my coping skills is laughing. Mm-hmm. So my humor.
Yeah. Mine too, I would say.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So we've talked about some of this. Actually, we talked about it in the context of the school to prison pipeline episode. But mm-hmm. we talked about students who face ongoing toxic stress will start to exhibit a range of behaviors that is, you know, sometimes hard to interpret as someone on the outside of their lives, because it seems like they're misbehaving or lashing out or doing, you know, this or that, but mm-hmm. it's not necessarily something they want to be doing. They're responding.
It's not something they've chosen.
Right. So they're responding to something in their environment that you can't see. So, I mean, often kids who are facing stresses will have more trouble learning, have difficulty trusting adults and having healthy relationships. They'll often have increased chance of divorce as an adult, which I thought was interesting because we have a pretty high divorce rate, at least in this country.
Yeah.
They'll have a higher incidence of behavior such as substance abuse, unsafe sexual practices, engaging in high-risk sports, which I thought is interesting. Like, what is that kind
of? I think those are the types of...
Well, football, smashing your head into somebody?
I think it's more like I have students that have done and made decisions that they said afterwards were really stupid.
Like daredeviling.
Like, into a point of, yeah, inducing that reaction in themselves to make... Because they can feel it. Uh-huh. Does that make sense? Like, it's that riding a bike down. It's just, like, those types of, like, really high-risk things. Like, we've had a couple of students get injured in, like, pretty serious ATV wrecks. And I've had a former student killed in a car wreck. And, I mean, from that student who was... The former student who was killed in a car wreck, like, I've heard people say that they think he was driving more than 100 miles an hour on a back road. Like, those are the types of things that pop into my mind as... These types of high-risk things.
High-risk activities.
Right. Like, yeah. It's something that they would willingly know that isn't the safest thing, but because it makes them feel something, they're more willing to do it because that's what gives them, you know.
Yep. Kind of along the same lines as that kind of stuff. There's a high risk of smoking and alcohol abuse for those kids. Higher incidence of depressive disorders, post-traumatic PTSD, behavioral disorders, and even psychosis. And then we also have health outcomes like obesity, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and higher suicide risk, obviously.
Yeah. And I think those things are not that treating anxiety and, you know, like stress and things like that aren't important for like the here and now. But I think when I started to learn so much more about what it was doing to my long-term health, that's what really made me more, you know what I mean? Like determined to do something for myself. And the CDC has shown that when a child is subjected to frequent or continual stress from things like neglect, abuse, a dysfunctional family, or, you know, anything like that, that their organ systems are actually weakened. And so all of these things just kind of compound to their chances of suffering from obesity, having high, you know, blood pressure, developing even as a child or later diabetes, like... It just keeps compounding and compounding.
Say, like, brain architecture can be changed, altered by continued stress. And so you can, you know, experiencing especially long-term stress, especially when you're that age, can have a lasting impact on your mental state.
Yeah.
We typically tend to talk about stress in terms of, oh, I'm having a stressful week or day or something like that. When we talk about that kind of stuff, we don't usually think of it in terms of long-term ongoing conditions that
because you want to feel better control. In the here and now it's an immediate relief that you want, so you don't ever think, if I keep feeling this way every single day for, you know, this long, then what? So there's a thing called ACEs science. So ACEs science comes from the CDC Kaiser Permanente Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, and it was a groundbreaking public health study that discovered that childhood trauma leads to the adult onset of these types of diseases, depression, and other mental illnesses. It can also be linked to violence and being a victim of violence, as well as financial and social problem. The ACE study has published about 70 research papers since 1998, and it's still like in production today. Like, it's a still working organization, and it's also put out hundreds of additional research papers based on this study themselves. So ACE is the adverse childhood experience, and they are all types of things that harm a child's developing brain and lead to change how they respond to stress and damage their immune system. And this is the type of thing that could even show up decades later. And ACEs cause much of our burden of chronic disease, most mental illness, and are at the root of most violence. So this group came up with a test, and the test is 10 questions, and each question, if answered yes, is worth 1 point, and otherwise no answer earns them zero. And so the important thing about ACEs, we did this as a staff, I think it must have been 2 school years ago, and so we were all given the test to take. We scored our own, obviously, because some of it you didn't really want to share with your coworkers or whatever, but it kind of helped for us to understand, here are the things that we bring into our stress, And then also think, okay, if I cope with it this way, I'm 30, then imagine a teenager or a little kid,
right,
or something like that. And so it was really interesting to take it as a teacher. And so if you haven't done it, I would really recommend doing it. They have a website. It's just called ACES Science. And you can take it there. And they also have another test that goes with it that's called like a resiliency test, which then takes sort of all of these questions from their first test and then works out to show what sort of a resilient character that you have and how that can help offset, you know, some of the potential issues that, or like mental illness or disease or something like that, that could come from the stresses that were just sort of placed on you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to go through the questions?
Yeah. Do you want me to read them all?
Yeah. Go for it.
So here are the 10 questions. So you answer these based on if it happened prior to your 18th birthday. So number one, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt? Two, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you, or ever hit you so hard that you had marks or were injured? Three, did an adult or person at least 5 years older than you ever touch you or fondle you or have you touch their body in a sexual way or attempt or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal intercourse with you? Four, did you often or very often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special, or your family didn't look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other? Did you often or very often feel that you didn't have enough to eat, had to wear dirty clothes, and had no one to protect you, or your parents were too drunk or high to take care of you or to take you to the doctor if you needed it? Were your parents ever separated or divorced? Was your mother or stepmother often or very often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her? Or sometimes, often or very often, kicked, bitten, hit with a fist, or hit with something hard? Or ever repeatedly hit over at least a few minutes or threatened with a gun or knife? Did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic or who used street drugs? Was a household member depressed or mentally ill? Or did a household member attempt suicide? And did a household member ever go to prison? And so they've done tons of studies of this, using this, the ACE study, and it uncovered a stunning link between childhood trauma and the chronic diseases that people were developing as adults, as well as their social emotional problems. And so they were seeing things like heart disease, lung cancer, diabetes, and autoimmune diseases, as well as depression, violence, being a victim of violence, and even suicide. And so the first results were published in 1998, and it was followed by more than 70 other publications through 2015. And they basically, even through all of this time, showed that childhood trauma was very common, even in employed white, middle-class, college-educated people with great health insurance. It showed that there was a direct link between childhood trauma and adult onset of chronic disease, as well as depression, suicide, being violent, and a victim of violence. It showed that more types of trauma increased the risk of health, social, and emotional problems. And it also showed that people usually experience more than one type of trauma. So rarely is it only just like sex abuse or only verbal abuse, and they're usually compounding together.
Interesting.
So from that study, 2/3 of the 17,000 people in the ACE study had scored at least one, and 87% of those had scored more than one. And so this research that had been done actually inspired 36 states and the District of Columbia to do their own ACE surveys. And they all found that the results were really similar to that one 17,000 person study. So it seems to be consistent.
Gee.
Yeah.
2/3 of people had at least one. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of makes sense when you consider that one of the questions is, were your parents ever separated or divorced?
Yeah.
And the divorce rate that we
it's
have.
High. Yeah. Or I mean, you know, considerably high. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I mean, people don't necessarily want to consider like an event like a divorce as a mm-hmm. traumatic one, but especially for a student under 18 years old, that's probably pretty scarring event.
Even so. For my students that are going through it or have gone through it, you know, and have felt comfortable to talk to me about it, most of them can say that they know it's what was right, but that doesn't make it easy. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably one of those things that, you know, you have to choose then how to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for many of them, while it was hard to go through, I think that, you know, many of them can say like, this was what was right for everyone to be healthy.
Yeah.
So why is this ACE survey so important? It can help schools to identify students that need support. if this was something that could be given to schools and that was confidential, if the students felt like sharing it or however they wanted to do it, it could really help schools kind of build supports and get community, you know, partners and things like that to be able to come in to help with these types of traumas and to help with the general health of these students. But it's also important for teachers. Like, it was really interesting for me to fill it out and for me to think about these things and for me to think about my coworkers and all the things that you kind of bring to work not thinking about and how they affect you and how they impact you.
Yeah, I was talking to you when we were prepping for the episode about this, but I thought it was a little bit funny that you prepped a lot of the show notes for this, but there were hardly any notes about the stress that teachers feel, except mm-hmm. for that very last one there. And I just thought that kind of was like a testament to your dedication as a teacher. You're focused on your students, you're focused on helping them, but you're not focusing on yourself quite so much. You're not putting any focus on your own, you know, stress yeah. level and mental health, which is a lot of times what teachers do. And I just felt it was kind of interesting, and I was like, yeah, let's do an episode on managing stress in education. And you wrote it all about students, and you were kind of selflessly avoiding your own encounters.
I don't think
stress.
I wanted to talk about it either.
I mean, okay, fair.
What was I doing on my computer when you told me that?
You were looking to buy beer
on Kroger's.
You were shopping for alcohol.
I was looking on the coupons. Anyways,
not a form of stress management that we recommend.
No,
but it is one that we do. Even though we don't recommend
it. It's not a healthy option, though.
So I was reading a little bit about some of the impacts of stress, ongoing stress, on teachers and educators. I was reading this one article that was talking about burnout rates. This particular article was about really high stress occupations like nursing and teaching are the two that this focused on, because that's where this kind of stress tends to happen most. So if you can imagine...
It wasn't air traffic controllers.
Yeah, no.
I think I read somewhere at one point that they had the most stressful job.
I mean, that would be a pretty stressful job. Yes. I do agree. But no, this particular one, especially now, when you think about healthcare workers right now, mm-hmm. But even on a normal day, healthcare workers, the stress is the ongoing, every day in, day out, stresses they face. So if you can think about that and then consider that this particular study was examining the fact that educators face similar stress levels to those that nurses do. So just keep that in mind going forward. I was reading an article about this, mentioned this book by this woman named Esther Sternberg. She's an MD. She wrote this book called The Balance Within, The Science Connecting Health and Emotions. So she kind of examines the relationship of the central nervous system and the immune system in this book. This is kind of sciencey, but it's particularly relevant to you, especially in the middle of a pandemic right now. But immune molecules made in the blood can activate brain function. I don't exactly know what that means, but mm-hmm. I'm just going to go with it. But anyway,
I'll tell you all about it later.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll take that offline. So this Sternberg, she explains how stress directly connects our emotions to our physical health, which I think you and I are pretty familiar with. We get less healthy when we're more stressed. Mm-hmm. So anyway, she's talking about, again, nurses and educators, and she says that these professionals are faced daily with caregiving situations in their work lives, often with inadequate pay, inadequate help in their jobs, and with too many patients or students in their charge. Is any of this sounding familiar to you? Some studies are beginning Some studies are beginning to show that burnt out nurses and teachers may have not only psychological burnout, but also physiological burnout, a flattened cortisol response, an inability to respond to any stress with even the slightest burst of cortisol. In other words, chronic unrelenting stress can change the stress response itself, and it can change other hormone systems in the body as well. That's what I was thinking about when you were talking about kids racing around on ATVs. It's like, just to feel something. It's like, okay, I don't have a cortisol response anymore. It's a normal thing. So I'm just kind of this weird.
You just keep pumping it up floating, to whatever it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like normally this weird kind of dead feeling, stressed out, burnt out.
And we hear thing. That. Yeah, I mean, we hear those types of things with students who inflict any sort of self-harm as well.
Yeah.
It's usually like, because it makes me feel something. And so whatever has occurred in their lives has, you and I mean, kind of built them to respond this way, unfortunately.
I was reading a kind of bit of a counterpoint about the language of being burnt out or burnout. There was an article I was reading that was actually pretty interesting. I sent it to you, but it was talking about burnout versus demoralization. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about burnout, we're talking about sort of your lived experience, but so we're not necessarily talking about it in this context, but I have certainly heard it talked about this way. People tend to talk about burnout as if it's a teacher's responsibility or shortcoming or whatever. It's like, oh, you just couldn't hack it. Oh, whatever. It just was too much for you. Mm-hmm. Oh, you weren't built to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. So burnout has kind of become this popular buzzword that places responsibility on your shoulders as a teacher. And it kind of shifts the blame away from, or it can at least shift the blame away from, systemic factors that are impacting teacher retention and burnout and all kinds of things like that. So this article is talking about, and we'll link to it in the show notes, but it was talking about demoralization, which can happen on account of all kinds of different things. But the main ones that were cited again and again in this research that this person was doing was high stakes testing, punitive accountability systems, narrowing curriculum, administrative confusion, the amount of time you put into it, and frustrations that come out of being told you're doing it wrong, whether that's by administrators or parents or even students sometime. All these things that you just hear again and again and again. If any of us heard those things again and again and again in our lives, we would get out of there if we could, mm-hmm. you know? So we think about teacher burnout and teacher turnover rates. Mm-hmm. I mean, this problem is not specific to urban schools. It's often people talk about the urban teacher turnover rate, but this kind of demoralization is happening everywhere mm-hmm. right now in education systems. So, I mean, it's even happening in higher education too, particularly with the advent of adjunct forever teaching positions where people are trying to hack together a job out of teaching a couple credit hours here and a couple credit hours there and not having health insurance and all kinds of stuff. So it's just this ongoing constant stress for teachers everywhere all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's these things that we're talking about that affect students and children as they're growing do not just magically disappear now that we're an adult and it's no longer mm-hmm. it's no longer socially acceptable to discuss it or whatever. We should make it socially acceptable because we can't address these problems. We can't overcome these systemic problems that educators are facing unless we start talking about them more. Are you okay?
Just got bummed, you know? It's like that.
I'm sorry.
No, but I think the things you're talking about are, I think there's a magnifying glass on all of that right now. And I think with the response to COVID at not only the state level, but at the federal level as well, it's really putting teachers in some tough spots and they're being forced to make some really hard decisions. And I mean, it's been hard for me, you know, to feel excited about going back to school.
I mean, you're being asked to risk your physical health, but also the physical health of the people that you live with or quarantine with, yeah. your family members. Mm-hmm. And then this is what we were talking about earlier, but even moving online, it sort of makes you this instant concierge who has to be available
yeah.
all the time for all kinds of weird scenarios. Mm-hmm. It's like you're one of those chat bots on websites that like helps. Yeah, it's what you feel like when you're doing online education a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's definitely timely to be thinking about some of these things. It's timely, and I think everybody just needs to give teachers especially, but also students, a bit of a break because we're in weird, uncertain times, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe lay off. Maybe be a little less angry. Maybe right. just wear a mask because it makes things easier for everybody, you know? Just yeah. these things are not, it's not that difficult to be a little bit kind. So practice kindness when you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's just so many sides to all of this. It's so difficult because as a teacher, I feel one thing. But I had talked to my coworkers and things like that who are parents, and I understand they're, you know, like, it's, and so I'm not immune to understanding the other takes on it as well. But it's just really hard, and I hope that the one thing that people involved in school communities or who teach or who have kids or, you know, just whatever, that you're able to kind of go into this year with the knowing that we're all doing our damnedest and that maybe that, you know, these sort of horrible expectations that we've placed on education that we've done it ourselves, and that maybe the learning needs to happen a little bit differently for it to be effective, and that even without test scores and things like that, that it can still be valuable. And I hope that that's kind of a big push. The dog is just snoring on the floor, so her stress level is through the roof, obviously.
How do we cope with all of this other than by shopping for beer
online for the Kroger pickup is a good move. No, I mean, with students, the key is just awareness. And so some cities have set up task forces and others are working with schools, pediatricians, daycare centers, the justice system to help set up like screening programs that can help turn these lives around. It's important to protect children from toxic stress. And so a lot of times this is even just not having your kid be part of a conversation because you think they need to be. You know what I mean? Like, there were definitely times when I was growing up that my parents chose to not involve me in a conversation because they knew it wasn't going to be any good for me. You know what I mean? Like, that I wasn't mature enough, that I couldn't handle it, things like that. And I see a lot of times that our kids are dealing with things that sometimes I just want to talk to the parent and be like, why? Mm-hmm. What is them knowing, you know, like that type of thing. And so, I mean, that's not my place to step into the family living room and be like, can you not? But like, those are the type of things you have to think about. What is successful is like a multifaceted approach that targets both the caretaker and the child to help strengthen family stability. And that's really important. And so as more programs are enacted and kind of happening all around, researchers are finding that children benefit even when the solutions are solely focused on the caregiver and not on them. And so this is likely because the caregiver's altered interaction with the child obviously makes the kid feel safer. So that can be like a parenting class, a family-based program, access to social resources for parents, all kinds of different supports, therapy, obviously. And sometimes it's even just things like yoga or working out. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many types of things, but there is proven success in community-based programs that can help students in these cases, not only to help them be a better student, but also a better person, better, you know, child, all these types of things. Like, you kind of have to look at the whole family and say, like, how can we make it healthier? Because we can't, you know, the kid isn't obviously able to just shoulder all of that and just be fine. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important that you focus on not just the kid, but also, you know, how can we make everybody healthy for everyone's sake?
Yeah. We're having a conversation with your family about this. Your mom was a social worker and your dad was a teacher, and we were talking about part of the problem with COVID has been having school resources be closed is that we're discovering how many things we expected schools and teachers to do and be for kids that are outside of the realm of just classroom education. So, you know, we expected teachers to be around for after school events to, you know, keep kids busy and or distracted or, you know, in essentially glorified whatever daycare or... Yeah. You know, we're expecting schools to feed kids. We're expecting schools to provide, you know, developmental psychologists for kids. We're expecting schools to be, to pick up all of the slack that you would hope a community would be willing to give.
And that can be all types of community too. That can be church communities. That can be, you know what I mean? Like, there are so many, I think that's what's hard sometimes is I wish that I saw more community interaction and less like school specific based interaction, if that makes sense.
Well, we can't continue to cut funding to schools and continue to expect more and more services to be provided by schools. We can't expect schools to fill all of these different roles at least, and especially if we're not going to fund them at the level that is required to provide all those different kinds of services. So, you know,
I don't know, man. Maybe
contact
we should stop
your elected officials.
Stop defunding education.
Hey, maybe that's just our tagline. Maybe we need to put it on a bumper sticker. Maybe we should stop defunding education.
I'm going
to
change the title of the podcast. Okay, so things you can do to help you cope with stress. This is an official list trademarked by me, Katie.
Who is not a medical or health professional.
I'm not at all, but I have read a lot about it.
Disclaimer.
And Brené Brown has led me into this path along with Glennon Doyle Milne, and I'm better now. So no, but really, there are all kinds of things that you can do. My first thing is whatever brings you joy. Yeah. What brings you joy, Charles?
Oh, we talk about this a lot, but we enjoy playing games together. And it's just, really fun and also disengages your brain mm-hmm. from whatever it is that's bothering you.
So, I really like mowing the yard. That's yeah. like one of my favorite things. I like yeah. really love to do that. It you know, it's kind of a little workout and gets you me up on my feet. But I like it. It's yeah. very rewarding to do.
We like to go on a walk around the neighborhood sometimes with the dog.
Yeah.
It's just I especially notice this when, I mean, you probably notice this too, but when I get to the end of the day after a day of working
yeah.
and I don't put some sort of buffer activity between,
you can't sleep. Yeah.
between work and whatever is not work, I either, well, I mean, if it's not that late, I either can't sleep or I can't focus on a conversation or mm-hmm. I can't like just chill out and breathe yeah. normally. I have to do something between my hard like coding, mashing code and fixing bugs and solving everybody's internet explosions. I have to go from that into some sort of kind of like buffer fun or disengaging activity to mm-hmm. get my mind out of
yeah.
work stress mode.
Yeah.
So
finding yeah. something that brings you joy, whatever that might be, and it yeah. can change with you. And you, like, I bought a tie-dye set like week two of the coronavirus, and I haven't done it yet, but like that'll be one of my joyful things. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of just need to, I don't want to say like treat yourself, but that's kind of where I'm going. You know what
I
mean?
Like organizing and cleaning things in the house, which sounds like it's not fun because it's housework, but it's actually kind of fun and satisfying to just mm-hmm. do, you know, to yeah. do something like that. And at the end of the day, you've accomplished something too, but it's just, it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah. So another thing that I personally have enjoyed doing is breathing exercises. And this sounds kind of goofy, I know, but it helps to calm you and to make sure that you're getting good air and oxygen to your brain, which is very important. And I just found some on like YouTube or something. And sometimes at night I'll like turn on, like we have an Alexa, and I'll have her play ocean sounds. You know what I mean? Like something like that, that kind of helps me just kind of calm down, kind of center myself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you need help and you know that it's something that you need some outside help with too, because you're not coping, you know, you're not finding a coping skill that really works, go get help, like a medical professional. Talk to someone, find a therapist. Some people, you know, need medication. Like,
this especially applies to people who constantly worry and are sad and who don't feel that they necessarily need that. Like, it's not a bad thing
no,
to just
not.
Go talk to someone.
But it's a hard thing to admit.
This is what therapists do. Yeah. They take all of your baggage and turn it into something productive for you to think mm-hmm. about so that you don't have to spend all of your waking hours worrying about whatever it is,
yeah.
even if it's a legitimate worry. Like,
yeah.
it's not to minimize worries or stresses, but it's just to say, if you spend more time, quiet personal time than not running over things in your brain that you wish you could have done differently or that you hope will turn out okay, yeah. it's worth it to maybe just go find a friendly neighborhood therapist.
Your friendly neighborhood therapist.
And work through these problems
yeah.
in a productive way. That's the thing. It's like, it's turning worry into productivity.
Yeah. And if you need meds, guess what? It just means that your brain needs a little bit of help to get what it needs to make you work.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Brain chemicals. It's not a bad thing to have imbalanced brain chemicals.
And sometimes
it's not
you're
a moral
only,
failing.
Yeah. Well, it is. And sometimes you're only on them long enough to kind of get you into a much healthier cycle. And then you're able to wean yourself off of them. So it isn't one of those things for everybody. That means it will be something that you have to take forever. And I think that's important because I think a lot of people think, well, I don't want to, you know, buy my happiness and whatever. Like, you know what all the tropes are about us.
Mm-hmm.
Medication, but okay. Physical activity, we talked about. That's very good for you. Good sleep and plenty of it. That one is crucial. If you're not sleeping,
right.
you're not going to get anything else. So you have to take care of yourself. This is something I've been working on in the last couple of years, but I've had to really set boundaries for myself and know what I can and can't handle. In the first few years in teaching, I was definitely wearing too many hats, and I was just doing it because I wanted to be valued and I wanted to feel like a part of it, you know? And I loved what I did, but it was just too much and it wasn't healthy for me. And so me stepping back and kind of, you know, getting out of things that I had been pretty into for a few years wasn't easy. But once I left them, I was able to kind of focus on myself. And you need to be able to identify the things that kind of set you off or are your stressors. So you have to pay attention to your reaction to something and be like, okay, well, what made me do that? Why did I snap? Or why did I get so angry?
or what happened, you know, like you just kind of have to be really willing to think about all of the little things that make up your day and say, okay, that wasn't good. So like for a while I was listening to like a podcast on my drive home that was about like murder, because that's like true crime is one of my favorite things. But I was coming home to an empty house and then I like wasn't sleeping. So then I made it so I listened to my true crime on the way to school. On the way home, I didn't listen to that. And that got me into like a better place for my night, which is so stupid. But it was just as simple as like, okay, Katie, you can't listen to that now because you're going to be home alone and it's dark. Mm-hmm. It's just goofy things. And I'm not, you know, but it was keeping me up at night because I was freaking out. And this is my last little soapbox, but I tell Chelsea this all the time, but your mental health is really one of the most important things in your life. And so if you aren't taking care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. So like if you're, I always use like a pitcher, like a glass analogy, but like if I'm always pouring from my glass, like there's nothing for me to have for myself. So as important it is in how, you know, for me, one of my love languages is taking care of my friends and family, but I can't take care of them if I'm not taken care of. And so you don't want to count on other people to do that for you, because you got to find it in yourself first and then you can take care of others.
You're here.
Thank you. I like live for this. This is one of my favorite things to talk to my students about too, because they're like, wow, a real adult who has anxiety and stress and depression. Because not that many people talk about it, you know, mm-hmm. in their life. They haven't had a lot of adults. And I will say that as soon as I became willing to talk about, at the time I was on medication and everything, I had so many students tell me that they were so relieved to hear someone talk about it. Hmm. And that made it worth it, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So anyways, man, just take care of yourself. Life is really hard right now. Whew. Questions?
No.
Thoughts?
No.
Concerns?
I'm going to go to an extra effort to have some de-stressing period tonight. So.
It's just whatever it is, you know? You got to find that little pocket of joy. Okay, last week's question.
Yeah, the fill in the blank.
Last week was all, or 2 weeks ago, since the last episode, was all about the Montessori education. So the question was this. This famous inventor, along with his wife, established the Montessori Education Association in 1913 and established the first Montessori class in Canada. Who was it?
Alexander Graham Bell.
And you almost gave it away last week.
No.
Okay. Maybe not.
No. I
was okay.
Just
so
excited.
This week, your turn.
Okay. This week, this is a relevant question to the day this episode comes out on July 23rd. This American astronaut and physicist, who at 32 was the youngest American ever to have traveled in space, was the only person to serve on each of the two committees to investigate the Challenger and Columbia space shuttle disasters. This person died on this day, July 23rd, in 2012. Who was that astronaut and physicist? You wrote a note here that has the answer, and you told me, don't say it, Chelsea.
Because you almost gave it away.
I love to give away the fill in the blank questions before we actually allow you to have a chance to answer them.
If you were in the classroom, you would be giving too much information to your kids to answer the question, you know?
I'd be Hermione Grangering the crap out of that.
Sort of. Except for Hermione would have known it without any sort of other prompting because she already did her homework.
No, I mean, like, I'm doing it to my students.
Yes.
Like, I know the answer, students.
Yeah, guess who? They did this and this and this and this. All right, what'd you learn?
What did I learn? Oh boy. So
this is a big one for
it
you.
It is a big one for me. So I enjoy cooking. It is one of the things that brings me joy that I will do to de-stress, even though, you know, getting ready for a big dinner party stresses some people out to no end. And while there is some amount of stress in the preparation involved in it, I still just love to cook big dinners for people and like do dinner parties and do whatever. Just cooking food for people is one of my love languages, so I enjoy that. So this past week I learned how to cook probably about like 10 to 12 pounds of how to smoke it 10 to 12 pounds of meat all at once in a really big smoker. It looks like one of those big bank safes. It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's an electric smoker. So a couple of things that are useful that I learned in this experience.
That's from the YouTube videos you watched beforehand.
Well, you know, some of them yes, some of them no. No, one of these things
I'm just kidding.
Not from a YouTube video, but because we experienced it firsthand. But anyway, a couple of things that I did not really know ahead of time that might be useful to you if you do get one of these big upright electric smokers. There are two pans in the bottom of it. One is for the wood chips. The other one, which I had no idea, is for some sort of liquid that you pour in that, as it heats up in there, keeps things moist. So you can use water. Some people use apple juice, depending on the meat that you're smoking or whatever it is you're smoking, because you can smoke other things too. But yeah, so also people smoke with a beer.
That's what I was shopping for today. Yeah. Was beer for the smoker.
Beer for the smoker. Mm-hmm. Right. For the smoker. Uh-huh. For the smoker. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
And number two.
So anyway, yes. Yeah, so the second thing is that depending on how your house is wired, it might be a little difficult to run high power appliances while you're using an electric smoker, because it draws a lot of power. And if you happen to turn on a microwave while the smoker is going, you might trip your breaker.
For half the house.
You might. Just saying.
While the dryer is also running.
Oops. Oopsie. Okay, and then the third thing that I thought was useful is get yourself a little butane torch, to like one that you can fill up with refillable butane. It's like the kind that you use to caramelize the top of creme brulee, like that kind of thing, like a fancy cooking torch. Get one of those to start your wood chips smoking before you turn on the smoker, because we have another little smoker that you can use indoors, and you just pack the chips around the heating element and they catch and they just smoke. But this is so big, so much bigger, and there's so many more chips, and it isn't directly on the heating element, that you have to start them smoking with flame first, which we didn't know. And we were like, I was sitting in the driveway for just like 45 minutes trying to light this thing of wood chips with matches and a tiny little like Bic lighter. So just get yourself a little butane torch, because it'd go much quicker, because you got to start that stuff smoking before you turn on the smoker. I just did not know that part.
Much to learn.
Yeah. So that's what I learned. How about you? What did you learn? I mean,
compared to that, it's all that interesting. Well,
I think it's very interesting.
So we, on our travels to Montana, spent a day in Yellowstone.
Driving in the car and quarantining.
Yeah, I mean, we only got out a few places, but I'd never been to Yellowstone. And so we made a little day of it. We were on a very determined trip. I had to see buffalo. I had to see as many buffalo as I could, and I wasn't going to stop until we saw some. So we drove forever. So anyways, we saw the buffalo. It was great. They walked right in front of our car. I screamed and hurt my throat. But anyways.
She did. It's true. It was really cute.
What I learned while we were there. So I sent a Snapchat to some of my friends about where we were. And one of my friend's husbands responded and was like, do you know about the Yellowstone caldera? And I lost service, and so I couldn't respond to him. So I asked Chelsea, and I'm like, what is this? And she goes, oh, it's this big volcano that we're on top of, and if it blows, we're all dead. And we're, like, in the middle of Yellowstone. And if maybe you don't know me well enough to know this or can't tell from this episode, my anxiety and stress comes from things like this. So now I'm sitting in a car in the middle of a caldera, or so I think I am, and I'm like convinced it's gonna blow. And it's been like, I think I looked it up and it was like 610,000, you know, it's been a long time since it's last obviously blown. So anyways, if you're wondering what it is a super volcano, and it measures, the top of it, 34 miles by 45 miles. So when it blows, we're all out of here and this podcast won't exist.
I wanted to give you the same experience that the park guide who told me about this gave us. And it was just like, I was a kid when I first heard this. I was probably, I don't know, like maybe 10 or 12 or something. We were doing one of these tours of Yellowstone. The guy's just like, yeah, there's a caldera in here. And when it explodes, it'll create a dust cloud that will cover the earth and prevent all sunlight from getting to it and probably provoke another ice age.
Anyways, on your left is,
and it'll probably explode soon. Geologically speaking, soon, at any moment, really. And I was just like, is no one else bothered by this?
Well, that was me in the car, because then I was just like trying to Google it, and we had no service. So then I'm like, is it close? Is it happening? Whatever. I didn't really, you know, appreciate that. But anyways, I learned about the Yellowstone caldera. And if you can't sleep and you'd like to not sleep for quite a while, I recommend reading about it, or just imagine the biggest volcano you can think of and then like times it by 10. And that's it.
And now go do a breathing exercise to manage the stress from what Kate learned this week. I'm going
to
go
tell my Alexa to turn on the ocean sounds.
All right. Any final thoughts?
Couple of things. I'm going to put a plug in first. One of my favorite shops in the Short North in downtown Columbus has been forced to close because of COVID. It's called Tiger Tree. You can shop online still. They have some really great books, clothes, all kinds of awesome merch. They were and still are one of my favorite shops. And I'm really sad to hear that, you know, all of sort of the economic response to COVID has caused this for them. But you can still purchase things from them online, or in the next couple of weeks, if you're in the area near downtown Columbus, you can go and shop for a 30-minute window. So, you know, it's one of those things that kind of hit with COVID that made it not like it wasn't real enough, but we're seeing some lasting effects from it. 2, Black Lives Still Matter. And 3, wear a mask. I don't want to be in timeout anymore. I want to go play and do stuff and see people and, you know.
No more timeout.
Just wear a mask. Even if it's like not comfortable, if you don't like it, if you think it's an infringement on your rights, it's not. Okay? It's the nice thing. It's the right thing. It's the kind thing.
Peace out.
See you guys next time.
Listeners, thanks for supporting 16 to 1.
We're trying to grow our audience, so please check us out at 16to1.com, all spelled out, and tell your friends about the show.
On our website, you can find links to follow us on social media, an archive of all our old episodes, and a contact form where you can get in touch.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next show.
Buffalo, 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 buffalo.
Buffalo's from Buffalo, Buffalo.
Buffalovian.
Buffalites.
Buffluvian.